From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. The mayor held another public safety meeting, which is really a sales pitch and kind of weird and conceited, but we'll get into it piece by piece. There's a report about how the Seattle mayor is also hiring a firm, independent firm, to probe SPD sexual harassment and discrimination claims. I think it's sabotage, Nicholas, personally. I think we need to get to the bottom of this, my friend. And also, you remember that person who gave $50,000 to those refugees so that they could
stay in the hotel longer? Yeah.
Jason
yeah.
Rance, that guy, he found out who gave away that money, and it was George Soros. Actually, it was a local person who's a sweetheart, but we can talk about that.
Well, right on.
So the mayor is holding a series of, what do you want to call it? Basically, public safety meetings.
Public safety meetings. Yes, this is the second of six, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And the meeting on Tuesday took place in Garfield High School, which is just a lot of shootings that have happened around that school in particular.
Yeah, We've talked in the last week or so.
Yeah, talked to Granillo about it. He was talking about, when he was growing up in that neighborhood, it's a little kind of a rough neighborhood, right? I mean, it's kind of a spotty place to be.
It's a lower income section of town. Yeah, there's a lot of gang activity in that part of the city.
It says public safety is our highest priority. The One Seattle Safety Framework defines the outcomes we aim to achieve and the vision to help get us there based on what we know works and have put into effect new approaches and our shared values. He got that off of a Hallmark card. I don't know if anybody. I was in the Hallmark store the other day.
Had the whole section for mayoral statements.
It was mayoral apologies. It was right there, right next to the Mother's Day cards.
That's research. Those are smart. Yeah.
Which is coincidentally was also in the Mother's Day card that I sent my mom. I said, "Public safety is our highest priority, Mom. The One Seattle Safety Framework defines the outcomes we aim to achieve and the vision to help get us there. My mother, based on works and have put into this." So this is a consultant who told the mayor to say this, right? This is a canned consulting.
It's a tested statement.
It's a tested statement. Yep. And this is where the mayor goes wrong. And at large, this is where all politicians go wrong. If you cannot speak extemporaneously on an issue and allow all the flubs and the missteps in there, you are not doing your job right, and this is, I think this is a negative for Mayor Harrell, being that when you talk about these issues and you have political consulting, too many cooks in the kitchen, this is the kind of trash that you tell people who are dealing with, children being shot, right? This is not what they want to hear, and it's unfortunate that the mayor is engaging in this kind of activity.
I think you're right about being canned and coming off as, I had these cards made up, so let me read from these to you to address your concerns about the safety of your families and your children. I will say this, though, about the meeting last night. They learned from the first meeting. Remember the complaints about the first meeting that was kind of felt almost like a talking to?
They came out and just had the
Chief Diaz and Mayor Harrell just go out and say, "This is why we understand how scared you are." Last night, there were 14 different city agencies, 14 different ones that had set up tables at Garfield. And there was a back and forth between the mayor and other speakers where they took more questions than the first time. But most of the people engaged with these various different city agencies of individual concerns.
I just want to be mad, Spike. You're trying to rationalize this, and I just want to be upset about this because that's a fine argument for somebody to make, and I just want to be mad.
They're learning. They're learning. They have another one scheduled for the first week of May or later this week. God, it's already the first week of May. Later this week at Rainier Beach, right?
He goes on to say, "Ensuring the framework is informed by meaningful community input is critical for its success, and these public forums will help add and enhance specific actions most impactful to the neighbors and communities. I am grateful for the hard work our emergency responders do every day, and I look forward to working with them, the city council, the city's attorney's office, and our neighbors to continue building a safer Seattle." That's a sales pitch, right?
You don't think that was off the cuff?
No, this is a sales pitch, my guy. And what you really got to talk about, and this is something that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, you got to talk about black youth. You got to talk about Hispanic youth.
Yeah.
You got to talk about rates of crime. And when you talk about that, and then you talk about, okay, so what is going on culturally in different communities, which is then further impacted by, if you want to use this term systemic racism, well, you could use that term, or if you want to use the term further impacted by economic conditions, which result in disproportionately young black and Hispanic males committing crime to their white counterparts. What is that issue, right? And I would say the argument that I would make is that when you have decades upon decades upon decades of intergenerational trauma combined with you know, people often say, well, it's the fatherless homes is what does it. That's the argument that people often make.
That's the easy one to make.
That's the easy one to make. The more complex argument that really, so why are there no dads? It's intergenerational trauma that stems back, ballpark it, about 150 years.
Yeah.
So now this is kind of the end result of a community which has basically been gutted, not only, you know, culturally, but also just kind of as a whole by state action, right?
I couldn't agree with you more.
The black community should have more of a gripe and has probably more knowledge as to how they have been wronged by the state than any J6er, any MAGA person.
You're absolutely right. And yet again, like, here we ask them to vote for a particular party who has abandoned them.
Right.
No investment in not just their schools. I mean, schools are funded through the property taxes in various regions. I think it's a very inequitable system where the nicer neighborhoods get the more resources, get the better schools, get the better programs.
Right.
And that, to your point, that just diminishes opportunities and even a sense of who you are for lower income communities, which are often most often communities of color. Right. You're not invested in schools. You're not investing in after-school programs,
right?
Sports programs, maintenance of fields or playgrounds, places where families can go and feel safe and have fun,
right?
And bond as a family. It's not just that there's no dad. Often that's the case, but there's no help.
Well, so
there's
actually,
no government. There's no representation.
There was a research that a sociologist did out of New York. I wish I could remember his name, but he did this fascinating piece back in 2015, 2016. Where although black fathers are often absent from the household, they are still involved in their child's life.
Okay.
So although they may not be physically in the house with mom.
It's a single parent household, but it's a two parent raising a kid.
It's not like dad just runs off. Right. Like, and so there's this, basically the sociological argument that he made is that oftentimes these fathers do want to be part of their kids' lives, but because of either economic conditions or the legal system, they are basically forcibly removed from their child's lives.
Yeah.
And not in a way that it's like a legal, you know, you can't see your kid, but they have a PO or they have economic conditions which don't allow them to be near their children. This is what I think that the mayor really needs to talk about, because the rest of this is just trash. You can talk about policing all you want. You can talk about, you know, building a better, safer neighborhood all you want. That doesn't make a difference to a 14-year-old kid who doesn't have an after-school program and whose mom's working two jobs. Like, this is a much deeper system. When people say systemic, what they mean is it's been so perverted by conservative media, even though it's totally applicable to everybody in the United States. Systemic is a series of systems which is designed to oppress, right? It's the most basic way I can put it.
Okay.
Every American deals with this, some Americans more than others, some Americans based on skin color or ethnicity, some Americans based on religion, right? This is this is across the board. Christians, white people, we all deal with a certain amount of systemic oppression.
Absolutely true.
And so I think that we should be in solidarity with the communities that are suffering from the worst aspects of state oppression, being that we're all Americans and we all have freedom, right?
I think everybody deserves an equal opportunity to succeed and equal support from the systems that are supposed to be in place, because they're in my neighborhood.
Those systems
are in my neighborhood to make sure my kids have opportunities.
So the mayor has hired a firm to probe the SPD sexual harassment and discrimination claims. Now, it's an external firm that's coming out that they're going to start looking into this. I have, Laura, I'm going to say something that's a little risque, so I might need you to chime in as the lady in the
now
group.
Now you made me nervous.
Okay, I'm sorry, I don't mean to, but you're the only woman within a 50-yard radius of this entire building.
This is true most days.
So,
and by design, by the way. Yeah.
So my read of this is that there are women within SPD who have been treated poorly by some people within SPD. But there is something that is going on now where they're saying, well, it's Diaz's fault because he allowed this to take place, as opposed to Diaz actually being the perpetrator. Does that make sense?
Hmm. Yes.
Like there's a blame upward. So there's this guy that we work with who's a jerk, and the manager is not doing anything to deal with it. And so there's this kind of like woman brain thing where
woman brain.
You get what I'm saying.
Woman brain.
You get what I'm saying, Laura.
No, I'm triggered, Jack.
It's going so well too, Jack.
What I'm saying is
I was listening with an open mind, and then my woman brain took over.
What I mean is like Diaz isn't doing anything about it. Therefore, he's in on it or he's complicit with it.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So are you saying it's a few bad apples and not a systemic issue in the police force?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But I'm saying is that I want you as the lady to say if I'm misreading this, because I am indeed a man.
I think that sexual harassment is a systemic issue in most industries.
Okay.
So I would disagree with you.
Okay. You're fired.
See how this all plays out?
Now there really won't be a woman within 50 yards.
So, we'll take the job.
My concern is basically that, like, if you're a woman and you've been wronged in this circumstance, in this system, even if Diaz tried to do something about it, the fact that there wasn't a result that was made, it's still his fault for allowing it to take place.
Well, where does the buck stop? Right.
That's what I'm saying.
In management, it does stop in management. But if the fact that we're talking about this, that a lawsuit was brought to represent four officers who feel that this was ongoing, was pervasive over a long period of time, and there's various officers or I don't even know if it's an officer, O'Neill.
It's Officer O'Neill, basically. It's a single officer, basically, that they're saying that
all four of these women are saying.
Yeah, he's basically saying that he's like a predator, that he is intentionally attempting to put women into compromising positions.
I don't know that I agree with the fact that someone in a supervisory position, I'm talking about the chief of police, Diaz, it should be losing his gig because under his watch, because from what I'm hearing from these witnesses, these complainants, and I'm trying to be as respectful and as I can, this has been going on for far longer than Chief Diaz has been at the helm of the Seattle Police Department. And we used to have a female police chief. So you would think that this kind of pervasive misogyny and abuse and harassment, you know, if it went on under a female police chief, and maybe I'm being a guy even thinking that should be more closely watched.
With your man brain.
With my man
there,
brain.
Spike,
right,
with your
which
man
we
brain.
Expect less from, let's be fair. I don't think that Chief Diaz it deserves to lose his gig over this. I think he's doing the things necessary to make sure that this antiquated, entrenched, systemic perspective of that it's just a rough and tumble workplace. It's just a masculine, tough workplace where sometimes aggression is the key to doing a good job.
Okay, so O'Neill was accused of telling his subordinate that he's quote unquote really good at sex during a quote unquote invite only Las Vegas retreat. When O'Neill and the subordinate returned, rumors spread throughout the department that Gulpin and O'Neill had engaged in relations on the trip. Wow. According to the claim acquired by the Jason Rance Show, the subordinate confronted O'Neill about the rumor only for him to respond, "That would be a feather in my cap," which is basically like Bond villain creepy, right? That's basically as creepy as you can be if that is indeed true.
That's fedora weirdo behavior.
That's fedora weirdo behavior.
I didn't know there was a clinical term for
it. I'm saying, that if these women, I just don't see in this world of HR and regulations and everything that everybody, Diaz is at the top of the heap. HR is above Diaz. You see what I'm saying here?
In a proper system, yes.
I just don't see how it's Diaz, if this was happening and occurring and these women are filing complaints, maybe there's a hole in my knowledge here. But isn't there a system that's already in place for people to make complaints within the police department that does not involve Chief Diaz, even though he is a supervisor and then would get involved at the request of that organization? Right?
I think you're exactly right in how it's supposed to work.
Right.
And these are, you know, in this HR world, you're right about this world where people are listened to, victims are listened to regardless of their sex. I think that's a kind of relatively new environment that we're living in. That's, I would say, last 5 years, last 10 years maybe, where this is what's the norm, is to expect accountability and expect people to be listened to when they have a complaint.
Most men don't know how to talk to women. I'll just say that broadly.
I think that most men,
Laura, back me up on this. Most men have no clue how to speak to women, right?
Yes.
Right. And what most dudes do is they speak to women like they're children, or they speak to women like they're in some way less than
in a very patronizing.
Patronizing.
Or through objectification. Based on their appearances most often, right?
Yeah.
Although sometimes it's really more subtle than that. It's just this feeling of being in a conversation with someone and realizing, oh, you don't think that I'm as smart as you, which I'm sure everyone has experienced, but I think it's a little.
I never experienced that. That's
so
weird.
To you?
No,
I got to tell you, I've been in this business for over 30 some years, and I was raised in that antiquated perspective. Women hadn't. And through most of my professional career, I don't say earned, that's not a fair word to say, haven't been recognized for the contributions of, and sometimes far superior to mine, contributions that they make in a workplace.
So I think the issue that a lot of men have in talking to women is that because they don't know how to, because women want to talk about the emotionality of a thing, right? Or how it makes them feel, okay, and their various perceptions on it and all the various tendrils that come out from that. Mm-hmm. Whereas men want to be very myopic and very solution oriented in their assessment of a scenario.
Okay.
So when a woman comes to you with a thing, meaning like, I'm thinking about getting this new place, she does not want you to say, take that new place. What she wants you to say or to ask is, do you like it? How do you feel about it?
Okay.
What about it do you not like? What are the pros and cons of it? That's how women bond, and that's how men can bond with women. But all too often what men do, because we're Cro-Magnons, is we go, get house. House good. Make warm. Make warm for a baby. Yeah, right?
Like, I thought it was just dad core, but it's man core.
That's what I'm saying. About, men don't know really, and they patronize women, and they condescend to women, which is why when I talk to guys and they say, I don't know how to talk to women, how am I supposed to talk to women? I always say the same thing. Talk to women like they're dudes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It'll get you through life like it's your best dude friend. And you're, bro, I got to talk about my feelings. That's how you're supposed to talk to women.
I think that we lack practice and trial and error in speaking to members of the opposite sex, especially in this new generation who hasn't engaged, hasn't gone out to meet people and been uncomfortable or asked somebody to dance. Or if they'd like to go out.
I made a mistake that I told you guys about, where I invited somebody to dinner as like a very friendly thing, and it was in no way, shape, or form intended as like a date in any way, shape, or form.
But that's how it was interpreted?
And that's how that person interpreted it. And then I had to write a very extensive, I am so sorry. That was frenzies. I was in no way, shape, or form saying like, hey there, pretty lady, you want to come on a date?
It wasn't that.
Come on a date with Dr. J here.
Maybe this person had been subjected to that so often they didn't know that it was coming from a good position.
And that's an example of something we can all learn from, I think. By the way, the person that gave the $50K to all those... just a local lefty author, poet who had $50K to spend.
So was Jason Rand celebrating this man's generosity and humanity?
Yes.
Again,
look at you.
Man brain.
Your man brain over there.
Oh, I can't have 50 grand of donuts. Are you crazy?
Somebody needs to stop.
It does. I'm so sorry. Well, jeez, was Jason being very complimentary to this lady?
Yeah, she gave away a lot of money.
That's awesome.
It's pretty sweet, so I think that should be celebrated. Although they wanted to be anonymous, so I think it's important to let
Jason
them be.
Jason out them?
No. I think their name was put out there, but Jason didn't do that. He's
okay,
a good guy.
Okay, good.
Terminally online, Como News had a poll about the protests that are going on U.S. college campuses, and the comments are hilarious. They are some of the funniest comments I've ever seen.
Okay.
Local people voted in this poll, and the overwhelming amount of them voted in one particular way about these protesters on college campuses. We'll talk about it. We get back right after this.
The internet can be a dark and often dangerous place. Only one man has the courage to go where no sensible person would go. Jack Stein is terminally online.
Terminally online, exploring the deepest reaches of the internet so you don't have to. So I went to the deepest, darkest website out there, place that causes grown men to shiver in fear, right? To turn away. Their gaze, they can't look at it.
Why would you go to someplace like this?
Como News is where I went.
Como News?
They do polls, right?
Oh,
and here's the thing about Como that makes it such a... Como is a great news organization, but they've made two massive mistakes with their website. One, they do polls. And two, they leave their comment section open, which is maybe the biggest mistake that anybody could possibly make. But they had this poll on their website, which was, how do you feel about the ongoing protests on U.S. college campuses? Free speech expression is option A.
Mm-hmm.
Disruptive but mostly fine, option B. Dangerous and inappropriate, option C. Each case is different, that's option D. Now, if it was me, I would say each case is different because some of these protests are relatively peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these protests, they're taking over libraries. They're breaking into halls. They're graffitiing all over the place. A nuanced, heterodox thinker would say each case is different because that is objectively the truth of the matter.
I would probably go with disruptive, but mostly fine for the same reasons you cite.
78% people say that it is dangerous and inappropriate. That's what they say.
Okay.
They go on to talk about Columbia, California State Polytechnic, Yale, Connecticut, Harvard, Princeton, Brown, Northwestern, University of Texas at Austin, USC, Los Angeles, George Washington, Virginia Tech, DePaul. Wow. They really did a number over here. And then if you scroll down as I did, because I hate reading, if you go down to the comment section, 150 comments on this.
Okay.
Which is the comment section, as I have said previously, is the proverbial watering hole of our current universe. It used to be that the great mighty gazelle, the vulture, they would all sing songs. I've seen The Lion King.
Sure.
They would all sing songs around the watering hole and live in perfect harmony. That all changed sometime in 2016 because now all anybody ever does is yell at each other. But what's fascinating about this, I want to do a little parallel thinking here.
Okay.
These protests are disruptive in some cases.
Yeah.
They are violent in some cases.
Yes.
There's graffiti in some cases. In some cases, you have people who are assaulting police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And then in other cases, they're really quite very peaceful, right? Some people might even call it like tourism, we might say.
Ah,
okay,
that's
all right.
An interesting
Let's
take.
Think about this for 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we look at January 6th as an example, you have almost all the same identifying markers, but people are very quick to defend the expression of free speech on January 6th.
Mm.
They're very quick to do apologetics for that kind of protesting. They're very quick to dismiss the ugly parts of it, right? Those people are bad. Let's all move on, right?
Yeah, and not to generalize the entirety
of the protest. I mean, right?
Yeah, I would never do that, yeah.
No one would ever want to do that. But then if you look at what's going on with these kids at these college campuses, blanket generalizations, everybody in the same bucket. Everybody's participating in bad faith. And in order to think about it that way, it's kind of an example of somebody's own cognitive dissonance. Two concepts that are equal, but you view them in certain ways.
Mm.
You view, meaning that they are equal in their analysis, but you approach them in different ways based on the way that you feel about them. That is cognitive dissonance. And that's what I see in the Como News comment section, which is a pretty much an abysmal place. And
is there any good takes? It probably takes a long time to read through to find a good, solid based take.
Okay. Here's a good one. This is from Mark 0001. Go protest. He says, seriously, have fun in the tents and dance circles. But if you students really want to make a difference, go to the front lines. Yeah, baby. Boomer logic makes perfect sense.
One way ticket to Gaza? Okay,
so,
thanks.
There's another one here that says, why don't they go to Israel to protest? Another person, this is Hellcat19, says, none of this is free speech. It's about making trouble to draw attention to their quote-unquote cause. Just like January 6th. Parallel thinking is so fun.
Hmm.
It should be treated as such. Water cannons, bear spray, tasers, jail time, in that order. Somebody had a bad mom and a bad dad.
Wow.
That's a bad mom and a bad dad written all over Hellcat 19.
Isn't that one of the darkest moments of American history when those tactics were turned to?
Yeah.
And that's Bearcat's solution to kids on a college campus.
So Deputy Cletus says the Vietnam War protesters didn't march under a North Vietnamese flag. This is indeed wrong, Deputy Cletus. This is, in fact, incorrect. They used the Viet Cong flag, and you can actually see that in several pictures at protests throughout the 1960s and the early 1970s. So, you know, when you think about this, like the holes in knowledge that people have is pretty astounding. I just think that we as Americans are much more keen to condemn and to judge rather than to observe. Our default is to condemn and judge rather than to observe. This is actually a really good take, though. I will say I found one of these, just one out of the hundreds. Free speech is just speech. It is not trespassing, intimidation, harassment, destruction of property, violence, breaking and entering, or infringing on the rights of others. Those are crimes, and these are criminals that deserve to be jailed. If they are on student visas, they deserve to be deported, right?
I don't have a lot to argue that.
It's not a bad take.
Yeah, it's not a bad take.
It's not a bad take.
Did you see what happened at Brown University, which is up in Maine? It's one of the Ivy League schools, and I'm not saying that the Ivy Leaguers are a little more thought-driven than some of the other universities. The faculty at Brown got their protest ended yesterday, peacefully dispersed, because they agreed to have a vote amongst the faculty or the trustees, whoever it is that controls the endowment that Brown uses.
Trustees.
The trustees are going to vote in the fall on whether and how to divest the university's endowments from the different functions that the students have an issue with. Because divestment is
English is
thank
fun.
You. It's so much fun. It's so new to me. divestment is one of the main demands for most of these protests.
Right.
They want a ceasefire, of course, but they want divestment. And Brown used a peaceful, mature, talk it through. Let's listen to your concerns. We'll take active steps to address those concerns.
What
not,
are you,
not police actions or anything.
What are your hot takes? 888-973-5476. I'm curious to know what the listener's hot take on this show, because we have nuanced, heterodox thinkers that are not reactionaries. Right, Laura? Laura, don't shake your head like that. Just agree.
Yes, yes.
Okay, perfect.
I love everyone on the text line, especially Alex, who just sent me a photo of two cats.
You can always send pictures of animals to Laura.
Always welcome.
Always welcome, because we do love pictures of cats on this show. Producer's Choice, new segment that we came up with so that we could give Laura more responsibility.
Give us a little more time off.
It's a story that Laura picks that Laura wants us to talk about.
Nice.
Of significance.
Ooh, what could it be?
We have no clue. Actually, I do, because I picked it today, because Laura didn't know we were doing Producer's Choice today, but that's besides the point. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this. Washington walnuts have been recalled as 7 have been hospitalized from E. coli. Is it from E. coli or how do we say this in English?
Due to E. coli, I guess.
Due to E. coli, who wrote this? Julia wrote this. That's why. Is it from E. coli or is it as a result of E. coli? This is going to bug me. I am indeed a grammar Nazi. I just want everybody to know this. I am indeed very precise about the kind of grammar I want to use, despite the fact that I barely know how to use it myself.
Well, I think we owe that to the audience.
So organic walnuts are being recalled across several states as 12 people have been infected with E. coli, the symptoms of which are basically like a Sunday morning for you, Spike? That's about right. Like
porcelain, space, a good fan. You bet it is. Yeah,
The walnuts were also sold in Alaska, all over the place, right? And the thing about this that I don't understand is that we put so much effort into being clean, cleanly human beings, ostensibly, right?
Sure.
But when you really get down to it, I think we realize just how gross we are. Does anyone ever really think about this? Nicholas, do you ever think about this? You're on your phone. You don't care how gross we are as human beings, just how disgusting. Because E. coli comes from... You know where it comes from, it's like
airborne.
It comes from a place that most people don't want to talk about.
Down nether. Yeah,
Nicholas, you pick it. Human beings are gross, right?
Overall, I would say yeah. Over my encounters in the long run,
and you work at the most disgusting station in this entire. I mean, literally.
That's debatable.
But the board is touched by how many gross adolescent boys.
I do think about how many people touch this area.
Yeah, it's filthy, Laura.
That room has a different odor than the rest of the building.
Exactly.
Okay, don't rub it in. All right.
It does have a different odor, right, Laura? Back me up on this. Your desk is very clean. It's very cleanly. It's cute. You have little tea bags. You've got lollipops. It's a girl's desk, right?
Yeah.
The other desks in this location are filthy, right? They're gross.
Yeah.
Human beings don't know how to be clean.
John Curley has a deflated balloon that's been there since I started working here.
He does. He also leaves his peptide needles in the trash can whenever he injects himself with his steroids.
Didn't you tell me there was a Sharps container just for him?
They make little ones, desktops. Didn't you say he had a couple-year-old candy bar that was open that he...
Okay, that's how this story... Okay, John was in like 2 or 3 months ago.
Okay,
this is the story about me watching John eat a candy bar that was very, very old. So John comes in and he sits down at his desk and I'm rapping with John Curley as I do. Hi, John. Go away, he says. Stop bugging me. Who are you? And so I say to John, we're just chatting about steroids and, you know, politics. And then John, he goes, I wonder what's in this thing. And he opens the little set of drawers that's right next to his desk. And in there, there's some gags, there's some goofs, there's some tissue paper, there's all kinds of gross knickknacks in there, things from John's past. There's like a, you know, like a Sports Illustrated from 1986.
Oh, wow.
All kinds of, that was a joke.
The Chicago Bears.
Yeah, there you go. So, but then underneath everything, John finds a candy bar that is open. It has had a portion of it that has been eaten.
Okay.
Right? Eaten?
Eaten.
And so... What he looks at it and then he unwraps it further. And you know when chocolate starts to go a little opaque.
Turns white.
Starts to go ages. John looks at it and he goes, this is probably still good, right? And before anybody can answer this, myself, Joe, Mickey Gomez, before anybody can confirm or deny it, John puts it into his mouth and then bites it. And then he looks at everybody approvingly and he goes, yeah, it's still good. Which is like one way to consume food.
It's the way a toddler would consume food.
But here's the thing. I've never seen John sick. Never, not one time in my life. The man's got an iron stomach. So maybe for him it was good, but for a normal mortal, much like myself, I would be in the hospital for 3 weeks, right?
Yeah. Because
he's got that Irish tummy that you're always talking about.
I can eat anything out of the fridge. I mean, my wife is amazed.
Has anybody in here been deathly ill with a version of E. coli or sapovirus or any of those kinds of things?
I'll raise my hand.
Producer's choice. Laura, do tell when you were
ill. Shout out to the Burger King and the Phuket Airport.
In Phuket?
Yep. Wow. Okay, that was a mistake.
What happened? Do you want to walk us through the process?
How much of the process do you want to know?
Whatever's PG, Disney process here.
I got a burger. And my friend got a burger, and I'm Irish too, but I consider myself a canary in a coal mine. Like, mm-hmm. if something is wrong with the food, I will be the first to fall, and everyone else who ate that knows that death is coming.
We watch Laura.
Yeah. So I woke up in the middle of the night feeling very, very bad, and of course I was in a hostel. The bathrooms were communal, as was the room we were staying in, and I just crawled back and forth until eventually I just spent the entire night in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And my friend who had also eaten the same thing followed me like 2 hours later to join in the misery. We were stall to stall next to each other, just tears running down our face.
Yeah.
And I actually ended up in the hospital the next day.
Oh.
I was telling everyone I was fine. Yeah. And they said, you're not fine. And then I begged to stay in the hospital longer because that little IV drip that they give you...
Because you had dehydrated to the point of physical danger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, couldn't keep anything down.
And that comes from not washing probably the lettuce on your burger.
That's what I'm saying. People are gross.
I think it was the meat.
Undercooked or tainted, aged?
Human beings are objectively disgusting.
There was water dripping from the ceiling into a bucket in the back of that restaurant. And I should have known. You learn.
The pandemic is still at the forefront of Washington School's superintendent race. Why? Because everyone's talking about Chris Reichdahl, everything he did wrong, right? Everybody's very critical of it. Three people are in the race for Washington State's school superintendent. Interestingly, they don't make any laws. They don't really do anything, but they do advise people as to how schools should be run. And Reichdahl has a resume, which might not work out for him too well. How loopholes in Washington State can protect abusive school staff. You're going to want to know about this because it's the dance of the lemons and it just keeps on getting worse. And is Seattle a walkable city? Crosscut wants you to die. We'll talk about that when we get back right after this.